Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Cigna Eating Disorder Awareness Series conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Kate Harner. Please go ahead.
Welcome, and thank you for calling into Cigna's 2013 Eating Disorder Awareness Series. My name is Kate Harner, and I'm a care manager on the Eating Disorder team with Cigna. Due to the format of the call today, you'll not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of the conference, you'll be transferred into a brief five-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After that survey, you will be able to ask questions of today's speaker. A handout for today's presentation is available online at www.cigna.com/eating-disorders. Halfway down the page, under the heading Current Topics, you'll see the link for today's presentation in blue entitled Eat, Breathe, Pause. Once again, visit the Awareness Series page online at www.cigna.com/eating-disorders. Halfway down under the heading Current Topics, you'll see the link for today's presentation in blue entitled Eat, Breathe, Pause. Please also notice the blue square in the top section of the page where you can click to sign up for these seminars. It's not required that you sign up in order to attend the monthly seminars. However, if you choose to sign up, you will receive email reminders for each month's presentation. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Ryan Smith. Ms. Smith is a registered dietitian currently working as a nutrition counselor at the Renfrew Center. Today, she'll be sharing information with us on mindful eating. Welcome, Ryan.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ryan Smith, and I'm going to be doing our presentation today. I am going to ask if you do have a piece of your favorite chocolate or candy nearby. We're going to do a little experiment at the end of my presentation today. So let's get started with the introduction. So individuals with eating disorders, basically they've developed a very poor relationship with food. With food, their bodies, and their senses. They ignore their body signals and sensations, and they really have become obsessed with food rules and regulations. They end up never being truly satisfied. They end up either restricting or mindlessly eating. So our objectives for today are, how can mindfulness increase awareness without criticism or judgment? Also, how can one change their relationship with food, with eating, their bodies, and their experience of being fully present in the world? So what is mindful eating? Mindful eating is about being conscious of why you're hungry. Are you tired? Are you bored? Are you anxious, happy, or sad? Mindful eating helps to develop a close relationship with your mind and your body. It's knowing the exact moment you're satisfied rather than being stuffed or starving. Mindful eating continued. So we often act without conscious thought of what we're doing. Sometimes it's the setting that can lead to mindless eating, so eating while watching TV or while driving. Sometimes it's the physical state an individual is in, such as if you waited too long to eat and then you were starving, or oftentimes I hear, I was so busy, I didn't take the time to stop and eat. The day just went by without me even realizing I hadn't eaten. The next slide continued, what is mindful eating? So mindful eating is also, it's about being open to eating foods. So a very common statement I hear from individuals with eating disorders is, I don't like desserts. A general statement like this is obviously not being very open-minded. In most cases, the eating disorder has convinced your loved one that they don't like certain foods. They may honestly think that they don't like certain types of foods because they have maybe banished them from their diet for so long. If your loved one has had their eating disorder since being a child, they wouldn't really even know if they like something or not, because really your taste buds change as you age. over time, if your loved one can keep an open mind with food, in addition to separating out the eating disorder thoughts, they will be able to determine their true likes and dislikes. So mindful eating is it's about developing new relationships with food. Some individuals with eating disorders may have a lot of negative memories associated with certain foods. Maybe, you know, the food is a fear food because your loved one only has consumed this food secretly or during a binge because there's shame associated with eating this food item. Or maybe your loved one has developed a food rule that this food should never be eaten because they read somewhere that it causes weight gain. So mindful eating is about overcoming some of those predetermined thoughts, such as this food's going to make me fat, or only unhealthy people eat this food, or if I have one bite of this food, I'm going to lose control and I might eat the whole box. All of these negative thoughts have to be replaced with more positive thoughts, and in order for your loved one to do this, they have to face that food in a safe setting and practice eating it mindfully. What is mindful eating? Continue. The next slide. So it's not about which food has less sugar or which food is lower in saturated fat or which one is made with whole grains. It's not about the type of food. Food really is neutral when it comes to mindful eating. Mindful eating is about the process of eating. So in order to help your loved one change their relationship with food, eating, and their bodies, they have to start using these mindful eating practices. That's a helpful place to start to learn how to eat mindfully. We're going to talk about each of these mindful eating practices. So the first one is observant. So observing the setting, first of all, this helps to identify if it's a vulnerable setting, such as in front of the TV or while driving, at a party socializing, in the movie theater. Also, are you multitasking? Or are you sitting down at the table with your food on a plate with all of your focus on eating? The serving size or the plate size. This is also important to notice because these can affect intake amounts. There was an article published in the Journal of Nutrition and Educational Behavior that talks about how moviegoers were given fresh popcorn and ate 45% more when it was given to them in a large container. This container size influence is so powerful that even when the popcorn was disliked, people still ate 33% more popcorn when eating it from a large container. So you can see how the plate bowl size can affect intake. Next bullet, you have taste. So taste, there's a few different things to talk about. There's temperature, aroma, speed, texture, and then the flavor or experience. So temperature affects the taste and enjoyment of food. Think of a hot cookie out of the oven or, you know, an ice-cold beverage or a hot soup. Everyone does have their taste preference. Some like their food hot. Others like it more room temperature. One thing to be aware of that your loved one may, if they have an eating disorder, they may purposefully make their food too hot even so they're not able to taste it. They may do this to avoid being able to enjoy their food, which being able to enjoy the food can be very scary because they might feel they would get out of control with it. The aroma is next. So basically the majority of what you're tasting is based on what you smell. A food smell can entice you to eat it because of your anticipation of the flavor, or it can drive you away. Without the interplay of taste and smell, you wouldn't be able to grasp complex flavors like vanilla or cinnamon. Instead, you'd be limited to the basic taste sensations like salty, sour, sweet, or bitter. Speed. So how fast does one eat? Chewing very slowly can affect your pace. Is your loved one always the last one to finish at the table? Or are they a speed demon racing through their meal? The pacing of your loved one's eating can be a food ritual, which we will talk a little bit later what a food ritual is. to help your loved ones slow down their eating, you can try having them set their utensil down every few bites. For an individual that struggles with eating really slowly, you can have them work on taking larger bites. Have them take larger bites, then ask them how taking bigger bites affects how they're able to taste their food. Texture includes different things like it's creamy or it's juicy, doughy, sticky, flaky, or thick. And then lastly, flavor or the experience. They're sweet, sour, bitter, salty, spicy, and umami, which umami is more of like a savory or a meat kind of taste. It's present in foods like tomatoes, grains, and beans. Then we have sound. So just recognizing kind of the sounds around you. It may be, you know, a hum of music in the background or conversation, or maybe even your food makes sounds like sizzling fajitas or, we all know, snap, crackle, pop if you've got Rice Krispies. And then the cues that stop and start eating. So we have external cues such as everyone's leaving the table, the plate is empty, the check comes, lunch hour is over. Someone starts clearing the table, that's an external cue. Or the internal cue would be your body feels full or satisfied, stomach feels extended, meal seems to have gone on for a while. So the goal is really to see your experience from a distance, to not get caught in your head. So that's observant. Next we have non-judgmental. So remember, when it comes to mindful eating, food is neutral. There's no such thing as a good or bad food. Forget about all the preconceived judgments. An example of a preconceived judgment might be your loved one might think, oh, Oreos are bad for me because, you know, it was never allowed in the house when I grew up. Mom said it was, you know, it was junk food. That's a preconceived judgment. So letting go of those, being open-minded. Also letting go of food rules, such as no processed foods are allowed, or I only eat whole wheat, or I don't eat any breads. An individual, when they have a lot of food rules, this leads to being very rigid. They're not flexible in their eating. It gives an individual the excuse, oh, I guess I can't eat because I don't allow myself X, Y, and Z. This then leads to starvation and deprivation, which may lead to a binge or maybe just constant obsession of food. Not to mention the fact that your loved one is then ignoring their physical and hunger cues if they have all these food rules in place. Providing a safe experience for your loved one will allow their judgments to lessen and their fears to lessen with the food item. Countering the judgments is also very helpful for your loved one. Basically, if they work on countering those negative judgments about the food and about themselves, they can practice doing that. Eventually, they'll feel more safe around eating these scary foods. Awareness is our next slide. Awareness of feelings, you see, and also awareness of energy levels. Food journals are something that I have a lot of individuals that I work with complete. It helps your loved one to connect to their feelings and thoughts with their eating patterns. So they can journal a little bit about their feelings and their energy levels and how that affects their hunger and fullness levels. Your loved one needs to be aware of their emotional feelings. Are they stressed? Are they happy? Are they angry, excited, grumpy, sad, frustrated? Because negative and positive feelings can affect hunger levels, can affect emotional hunger and fullness levels. For anorexics, negative feelings typically can lead to emotional fullness, whereas an emotional eater can be hit with more of that emotional hunger when they have or experience certain feelings. I have a metaphor that I like to use when I'm educating individuals about emotional hunger. It's called the hungry ghosts. And these hungry ghosts, they have very thin necks and tiny little mouths with big stomachs. So these ghosts represent an individual's inability to make themselves feel better by fulfilling their emotional urges and desires with food. So sometimes your loved one's desire for food is so enormous, but even when they eat, they're not emotionally satisfied. On the other side, emotional fullness can increase due to your loved one's, maybe their difficult work that they're doing in therapy. Maybe the food item is really scary. That increases their emotional fullness when they just see the food. Or maybe just eating in general is scary. Physical fullness can be increased due to the fact that your loved one may not be used to eating normal-sized meals, so they become physically full rather quickly. If your loved one is having to follow a weight restoration meal, meaning they're needing to gain weight, they will certainly feel more full. So it's helpful to come up with ways to lessen the emotional fullness. You can do this by helping them kind of counter the negative judgments. This food is making me healthier, okay, instead of in their mind, oh, this food is making me fat. Normalizing the portions. That's usually helpful to counter the negative judgments that they might be feeling that increases their emotional fullness. Usually by the end of the conversation and just talking with your loved one kind of about what they're feeling, this helps and they already will feel less full. It's important to know that food naturally, it does increase your serotonin level, which is a chemical in the brain responsible for alleviating depression. So it's natural and human for some emotional eating to take place. However, exercising, being social, such as talking to friends and family, this also can help raise serotonin levels. So individuals who struggle with the emotional eating component, they tend to rely too heavily on eating to lift their mood. Okay, so that's awareness. On to the next slide, acceptance. So one has to change their relationship with food in order to be accepting. They have to recognize that food is neither good nor bad, but neutral. They have to be accepting that it's important to listen to the body and the mind. So food rituals, basically these are ritualistic acts that your loved one does to lessen anxiety around eating food. So in a way, they act as an acceptance barrier. I'm going to give you an example of a food ritual. So if your loved one is faced with eating a cupcake, he or she may want to eat the frosting off really quickly because it's the scariest part to the cupcake. This would be considered a food ritual. I would encourage him or her to eat the cupcake normally by taking a bite of the whole cupcake. Some other examples of food rituals, cutting foods into really tiny bites. This could lead to your loved one not finishing the meal because they run out of time, so they end up restricting, or it makes a small amount of food appear to be like much more food. Another food ritual could be mixing foods inappropriately. This makes the food unpleasurable to eat. Which, as I said earlier, for some individuals, the food tasting good is quite scary because they feel like they might get out of control with it. Drinking large amounts of water at the meal, this may make purging easier after the meal. Or eating foods in a certain order, such as the cupcake example. So that's acceptance. The next slide we have present. So how to keep your loved one present when they're eating. Keeping them grounded is one of the key points to staying present. Their mind might be drifting to a past experience, especially if a food item reminds them of a past trauma or a negative experience. You know, your loved one might be eating and thinking in her head, oh, I have to, you know, I'm eating now. I know that we're having XYZ for dinner. What am I going to do to restrict? Or how can I get an exercise? It might be kind of affecting in their head. Or an emotional eater might think, oh, well, what's for dinner tonight? What if I get hungry before? Is this going to hold me over? So what you can do to keep them grounded, to keep them out of their head, is to engage them in conversation. So talk. Help them stay out of their head. You can even talk about, you know, the different tastes, the textures, what are you enjoying, or talk about anything else really even besides besides the food, just to keep them engaged. Each individual with an eating disorder typically struggles with their own list of food rituals. So it's helpful to be aware of what those rituals are. So when you see them happening, it's a good indication that your loved one is kind of in their head, or maybe they have a lot of anxiety. Those food rituals tend to come up when an individual is having anxiety. So those are helpful little red flags. So you know when you can be, you know, more supportive. So that's present. Let it go already is the next slide. So let's not waste another minute thinking about the meal. There's much more important things to do than think about food all day long. So the first one is letting go of the expectations for your body, learning to trust the body. So what I say is encourage counter of thoughts. Now, we've mentioned this a few times, countering thoughts. What does that mean exactly? Well, here's a couple examples. Your loved one might be thinking, well, what's going to happen to my body? Countering that thought would be like saying, encouraging them, you know, to remember that a serving of dessert isn't going to affect, you know, your body. You can trust your body with a serving of dessert. Nothing's going to be different, you know, the next day. They might also be thinking, you know, how can I make up for this later? The counter to that, you know, using symptoms is really not an option. It's not going to make anything better. It'll only make things worse. So what healthy coping skill can I use to distract myself? It might be, you know, to call a friend or to listen to your favorite song or go work on an art project to kind of distract the thoughts, get your mind onto something else. Another example might be, I feel deprived because the meal wasn't the way I like it. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't exact. The counter to that could be, you know what, there's always going to be another meal. It doesn't have to be perfect every time. It's okay. Okay, so that's let it go. The next slide we have here is self-compassion. So I feel like this is the ultimate mindful eating practice, because in order to be compassionate, you have to be accepting of food to meet your needs and your wants. You have to be aware of your physical and emotional feelings. You can't be judgmental towards food, because that will lead to being judgmental about yourself when you eat the food. You also have to be observant, and in the moment, in order to be able to really satisfy yourself. So there's a few ways that you can encourage your loved one to help them practice some self-compassion. So stop calling yourself negative names. If you find yourself defining who you are in harsh or critical terms, that's not going to be helpful. So find a positive label to replace it. Two is keeping yourself surrounded by people who love and really appreciate who you are. Three is setting boundaries for those who are negative or critical of you. And lastly, learn to be okay with pleasing and nourishing yourself. If you want a cookie, have a cookie, but try and eat it mindfully. The next slide is self-compassion continued. So is eating getting the full attention it deserves? Do we need to eat to survive? Yes, we do. It's pretty important. Eating typically doesn't get enough attention since we are all human, right? Your loved one can ask themselves, am I avoiding tasting this food to distract myself from certain thoughts or experiences? Your loved one will never develop a healthy relationship with food otherwise. They will continue to obsess about food because one cannot be satisfied if they don't allow themselves the satisfaction of eating. Another question they can ask themselves, am I allowing myself to enjoy? Sometimes the eating disorder is so convincing for individuals. They truly don't believe they like pizza, for example. Using the mindful eating habits will help your loved one to discover their true likes and dislikes. Sometimes it might take just exposing themselves to a scary food a few times so that way it can lessen their fears around this food and they're able to really ask themselves if they like or dislike this food. And then lastly, recognizing emotions. So mindfulness in general teaches your loved one how to be more in touch with their feelings and their emotions in order to avoid using food as a coping mechanism, such as restricting or emotional eating. So intuitive eating. When an individual is using mindful eating practices for a period of time, and they feel comfortable with all of those practices, they can start to look towards more intuitive eating, which I feel is the ultimate end goal for all individuals who struggle with an eating disorder. So one has to be able to practice, obviously, all the mindful eating practices, but also there's some readiness factors that are important. So trust of hunger and fullness cues. Your loved one, initially they can't rely on hunger and fullness signals during that beginning phase of recovery because their body likely feels prematurely full due to slower digestion. So they have to be, you know, following a plan for a while, really allow their body to get used to kind of normal eating patterns for a while before they can even start feeling those hunger and fullness cues and start to trust them. Their ability and their willingness to deal with feelings. So individuals with eating disorders, you know, they shut down at times. They engage in restricting, purging, binging, excessive exercise, food rituals, and obsessive thinking. Those are the coping tools for an individual with an eating disorder. So instead of using those, they have to have the ability and willingness to deal with their feelings instead of using their eating disorder coping tools. They must know what their likes and dislikes are. So they have to be able to make peace with food, have to be able to try new foods to figure out their likes and dislikes. They have to be able to allow themselves to experience pleasure from food. Ability and willingness to identify wants and needs. So once an individual determines their true likes and dislikes, they can identify their emotions, they're able to identify their wants and their needs. They have to be able to take risks, trying new foods, broaden horizons. And then lastly, they have to be able to identify vulnerabilities. So your hunger and fullness levels can be affected by certain vulnerabilities, such as when you're tired. Oftentimes when we're tired, we reach for food, even though we might not be hungry. Stress can do the same thing. Stress can also lead some to not eat, or their emotional fullness might be higher when they're stressed. When an individual is disconnected, when they're feeling sick, after intense exercise, believe it or not, hunger and fullness levels absolutely can be affected, and even within mood shifts. So being able to identify their own vulnerabilities is important. So before having your loved ones start on intuitive eating, it's important to discuss the readiness factors. Okay, so this next slide, the struggles with food. We're going to have two examples that I'm going to read through. And I want you to think about the mindful eating practices that these two different women in these two different cases are struggling with. So case one. So Kate is a single 36-year-old successful marketing executive who is an avid tennis player. And in her spare, she's an avid tennis player in her spare time. So Kate has been successful in everything she's done throughout her life. She approaches everything with a competitive attitude. She's been struggling with an eating disorder on and off throughout her life, but things have gotten worse over the past 3 years, ever since she was promoted in her company. She recently admitted to her therapist that she struggles with feeling like she has to eat less than everyone around her to feel like she is in more control than those around her. Kate admits this gives her a sense of power and the feeling that she's better than others. So in thinking about the mindful eating habits, the practices that she's struggling with in this scenario, so basically Kate, she's being overly observant of what others are thinking of her. She's not aware of her own feelings. She's being judgmental towards herself, and that if she does not eat less than others, then she's out of control. She's not present at her meals because she's too busy worrying about what others are doing. She's not being accepting of the fact that everybody's needs are different, in addition to the reality that she doesn't really know what's going on with others or why, you know, why they're only having a salad for lunch. Maybe they already ate lunch or maybe they had a late breakfast. She doesn't know. So overall, Kate, she really doesn't have much compassion for herself. She's really not listening to her own body. She's only using external sources to guide her. So that's case one. Case two. Erica is a 25-year-old stay-at-home mom who has three kids. She's married to an abusive husband and she's battling with depression. So Erica has struggled with her weight since a child, but recently she has gained 10 pounds. When Erica's husband leaves for work and the kids leave for school, Erica finds herself feeling very alone and sad during the day. She finds herself making frequent trips to the refrigerator to eat because it gives her a sense of comfort. So the mindful eating practices she's struggling with. Well, Erica is using food as a way to help her feel less sad and lonely. Eating has become her routine way to deal with her emotions, which has resulted in the 10-pound weight gain. Erica's not aware of her hunger and fullness cues because she's using food to numb out her emotions. She's not observant of the amounts she's eating throughout the day, the amounts of food. She's not present when she's eating, so she's not really tasting or enjoying her food. So after eating, Erica feels very guilty and shameful about herself. So she's also not being very compassionate. So that's just a couple of examples so you can see how some of this may apply. So the next slide, mindful eating tips to try. So these are just some simple things that you can put into place. So plate your food, sit down and eat. This is going to really help you and your loved one work on that acceptance. It will help keep them present. It will also help your loved one practice that self-compassion. So instead of kind of just grabbing snacks here and there, kind of eating while standing up, not really sitting down and taking the time to sit down and eat. So that's number one, what I would say to try first. So spooning. So what does that mean? Well, to help your loved one pay attention more to the process of eating, especially this is helpful if your loved one has a tendency to eat really fast. They can actually put their eating utensil in their non-dominant hand. It helps them pay more attention to kind of what they're doing, helps them become more attentive to the process of actually eating. The third one there, switching it up. So this is a tip to enhance the overall taste experience. Switching up bites. So many people eat all of one food item before kind of biting into another. By taking a few bites of one item and then trying another, basically your taste buds recognize the new sensations, and they quickly become used to the taste, and it becomes less pleasurable. So, you know, you try a bite of hot creamy casserole and then try a bite of cold crisp salad. It kind of explains why some things go so nicely together, like warm apple pie with, you know, cold, smooth, creamy ice cream. So also varying the bites can also help slow one down so they're paying more attention to what they're eating. Pacing. We mentioned this one earlier. Taking larger bites for an individual that eats really slow, or smaller bites if someone eats really fast. Sleep. So lack of sleep definitely can interfere with the balance of hormones that regulate metabolism and weight. Lack of sleep clouds awareness. So many mistakenly turn to food to get a burst of energy rather than take a nap or to go to bed early. So making sure you're getting enough sleep, your loved one is getting enough sleep. And then the last one, shift your routine. So if your loved one finds themselves getting caught up in night eating, try having them shift bedtimes and wake-up times. Rearrange the everyday routines. When one struggles with mindlessness, it's likely mindlessness appears in many other areas of the person's life. So it's helpful to get out of that autopilot routine and change some things around a little bit. So a mindful eater, the next slide here, basically a mindful eater accepts their own eating experience as unique. They direct awareness to all aspects of food and eating on a moment-by-moment basis. They look at the immediate choices and direct experiences associated with food and eating, not to the distant health outcomes of that choice. So, for example, Sally doesn't eat blueberries because she thinks they're going to help her lose weight, but she eats blueberries because she enjoys the flavor and the texture mixed with her hot cereal in the morning. Okay, so now we're going to do a little exercise here. So it's time to get that piece of chocolate out or that piece of candy. And we're going to read through a mindful eating exercise here. So I'm going to use the chocolate as the example. But if you have a piece of candy, that's fine too. So look at the chocolate. I want you to examine the shape, the color, and the texture. I want you to notice if you have any judgments or preconceived thoughts about what it's like to eat a chocolate. Now I want you to let them go. Begin to unwrap the chocolate and listen to the crinkle of the wrapper. Take a whiff of the chocolate and notice the aroma. Take a few deep breaths in and out and allow the scent, follow the scent as it travels through your nose into the back of your nostrils. Notice the anticipatory salivation as you put the piece of chocolate up to your mouth. Now put the piece of chocolate in your mouth. I want you to notice the taste, the texture, and the temperature against your tongue. Now begin to chew. Notice how the texture changes as you chew. You might feel a desire or even an overwhelming urge to quickly reach for another one. But relax and stay focused on what you're experiencing in this moment. rather than jumping forward and anticipating the next bit of flavor. Continue to notice the different tastes as you swallow. And pay attention to the different sensations you experience as the chocolate slides down your throat. Be aware of any feelings, sensations, or memories around chocolate, but focus your attention on the taste and the texture. Now imagine the piece of chocolate in your stomach. And if you are experiencing a desire to still have another, then completely finish this one and only then reach for the next. So that's a little experiment that you can do with any of your kind of favorite, you know, little treats. And I think it really can help change how you, you know, eat some of these things that you really enjoy. So I encourage you all to try it. If you didn't get to this time, you can always re-listen to it. And that's the end of the presentation.
Thank you. To help us evaluate and improve our program, at this time we will conduct a brief survey. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by pressing the star key followed by the number that corresponds to your choice. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in the survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. Our first question, this session educated me on the benefits of mindful eating. Press star 1 to strongly agree, star 2 to agree, star 3 to disagree, star 4 to strongly disagree. Please stand by while we allow everyone a chance to respond. Question 2, this session educated me on mindful eating techniques. Star 1, strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. Star 4, strongly disagree. And we'll pause. Question 3, overall, this session met my expectations. Star 1, strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. Star 4, strongly disagree. And we'll pause. Question 4, I would recommend this program to others. Star 1, if you agree. Star 2, if you do not agree. And question 5, please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with an eating disorder. Star 1, I am an individual with an eating disorder. Star 2, I am a family member of someone with an eating disorder. Star 3, I am a health professional. Star 4, other. And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate that your line is open. Please state your name before posing your question. Again, that's star 1 to signal for a question at this time. Again, that's star 1 to ask a question. And we'll take our first question.
What if you tasted the chocolate and wanted to eat 100 more pieces?
Well, what I would say is if you feel like you would be out of control with the chocolate, I would say there was probably some of the mindful eating practices that you would really have to work on. I think typically if you're really being mindful, it's surprising. It definitely, I think, for most, having one little piece of chocolate, you know, especially if you're craving a dessert, you're not going to be just satisfied after one little piece of chocolate. But typically, if you're really being mindful and recognizing that you're eating and not just kind of eating, like, not going to eat, you know, a whole, you know, bag of chocolates, if you're really being kind of, you're paying attention to your body's signals and sensations. But if you find yourself getting through a whole bag of chocolates, I think you kind of got to go back and revisit those mindful eating practices and see which one you're kind of struggling with.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And once again, that is star one to signal for a question. And we have no further questions at this time.
Okay, well, I want to thank everyone for attending and also offer my thanks to Ryan Smith for providing us with such wonderful insights today. If anyone has further questions about any of the practices discussed today, please feel free to contact the Eating Disorder team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Also, please make sure to mark your calendars to join our next Eating Disorder Awareness Seminar next month on Tuesday, February 26th. At 1 o'clock Eastern Time, noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific.
Again, that does conclude today's presentation. We thank you for your participation.